You're listening to The Comedy Cellar, live from the table on the Riotcast Network, riotcast.com.
Good evening, everybody. Welcome to The Comedy Cellar Show here on Sirius XM Channel 99. We're here with, of course, the fantastic Mr. Dan Natterman, just fresh off his triumphant off-Broadway performance as Ebenezer Scrooge, the beautiful Miss Kristen Gonzalez. And we have a couple guests today. We have Mr. Jim David is going to be here, as well as an author from Rolling Stone magazine. But usually we start the show, we just check in on Dan and his week. He usually has something he wants to say.
Well, you mentioned it. I just want to clarify what you meant by off-Broadway production of Scrooge. We did a reading of Christmas Carol around the corner at the Village Underground, and I played Ebenezer Scrooge. Some might say that's perfect casting, as I've been known to be somewhat grouchy, but not just at Christmas time. By the way, no, I'm speaking of Christmas time. Yes, I assume we're not having... I'm assuming we're not having a holiday party this year here at the Comedy Cellar.
No, we're going to have a holiday party.
But we don't have much time. We better act fast.
Well, we usually have it the week of New Year's Eve.
And you know how I feel about that.
Yeah, you're right. We usually
have it after so that it doesn't conflict?
Yes.
We were supposed to have it last night, actually, but we just didn't get our shit together and we didn't have the holiday party. So it would have been a nice...
Except nobody would have known about it.
The truth is we're so busy now, Dan. Business is just... we don't have time.
Well, you have time. It's a question of whether you want a holiday party or another show, another revenue-generating show. And you've made
What do you think? That's a no-brainer.
Well, that's certainly your choice to make. Although I think your employees and comedians would certainly appreciate a holiday party, but what the hell is that?
You know what I've learned? An unfortunate lesson.
What on earth is that?
It's the blender.
I bought that for my wife for Christmas. I've learned, and it's a sad fact of life, that people don't appreciate. Like people don't appreciate. No matter what you do. Like, they'll appreciate it for a few days, but the second something...
You're saying people wouldn't appreciate a holiday party?
They appreciate the holiday party during the party, but like 2 weeks later, if I do something that annoys somebody the slightest, they won't be like, let me give him a break. He did throw us a holiday party. they don't care.
That's not the way it works.
It doesn't work that way. So you'd be like, what would I do?
Does not work that way.
I've had musicians, like people that I've laid out thousands of dollars, carried them financially through tragedies, whatever. 2 weeks later, we'll just not show up to work. You know, like, I got a gig for extra $100.
May I say that I greatly appreciate the cauliflower currently on your menu that accompanies these chicken skewers. It's delicious.
You're upsetting me, but yes,
well,
the cauliflower is
delicious. Why am I upsetting you?
Because the new menu, we're having a lot of trouble getting this new menu off the ground properly.
I'm giving you a compliment on it.
Right. But the thing that is always good is the cauliflower.
Oh, it's great. Well, I don't like cauliflower.
So by saying you like the cauliflower, you just reminded me that everything else is not where I want.
Everything else is fine. The couscous could use a little seasoning.
You know, I was the other day dining in a fabulous restaurant.
The first person to say that, Jim.
What is the... Why are some restaurants so good and some restaurants just don't cut it? Is it the quality of the food or the quality of the chef or a combination?
Quality of the chef.
What is the most important factor?
Wrong. It is the quality of the owner.
Oh, God.
It is. It absolutely is. Like, why do some places have good service and some places have bad service? Everybody hires from the same dumb pool of people who want to wait tables. The good management has good service. Some places always have bad service.
No,
doesn't
but she's talking about the food, whether the food is good or not.
That's also the owner. The owner's got to get a good chef, and he's got to buy good quality food. I mean, you can buy shitty food.
To keep the chef's nose to the grindstone or foot to the fire or whatever the metaphor is, because...
That's why you got to go to chef-owned restaurants.
Back when I was a waiter, I worked at a chef-owned restaurant on the Upper East Side, and it was one of those places where Barbara Walters and Woody Allen would go for lunch.
Yeah. Like Elaine's?
No, it was called Arcadia.
Uh-huh.
And it was run by this genius chef who was the most hideous human being on the face of the planet.
Takes a tough man to make a tender chicken.
She was a horrible human being, and I hope that she has met great physical harm over the years.
Chefs have a reputation for being a little bit out there mentally.
She was the worst.
Listen, this is a bummer.
But in the kitchen, she was a genius. She would have she would have dishes on the menu like corn cakes with creme fraiche and caviar. I mean, it was incredible.
Well, I don't like that kind of stuff. I want simple, straightforward food that I can eat like every week.
Bring back the Mideast combo platter, please.
Yeah, we're bringing it back. Good. But here's the thing. So, like, we have a hummus plate. So hummus, you know, has been served for probably 1,000 years in the same way. A round plate. All of a sudden, I come in, and hummus plate is served in a bowl with a little garnish. I'm like, what? Nobody wants hummus this way. But to a chef, and there's practical reasons why it's not good also, because you put oil and stuff on top of the hummus. So if it's a deep thing, the first few bites have the oil, and then you have it.
Right.
But in any event, this is the problem with chefs, is that to just serve hummus the way it's been served for 1,000 years, like, what do you need me for? I'm a chef. I'm an artiste. I have to do a new take on hummus. And from time to time, like, as you use the word genius, from time to time, just like with genres of music, somebody will come up with something which is amazing. And but most of the time, it's like, you know, this is horrible. All right. But I'm not saying that about our show. Our food is really coming good. We're just having trouble having everybody in the kitchen learn it, having make it consistent, having them all used to the fact that if we're really on top of the customers to make sure that they like it. If they don't like it, we're taking it back and that kind of thing. Anyway, so there's an article in Rolling Stone magazine this week, How Trump's Win is Changing Stand-Up Comedy. It was written by Michael Stahl, who was a freelance writer, editor, and journalist based in Queens, New York. That's where Donald Trump comes from. Who has been published in several print and digital publications. He is a features editor at Narratively. Hello, yep. Mr. Stahl. Greg, come sit down. You wrote this article in Rolling Stone. Mm-hmm. And the first question we have for you, and I have a lot to say about this article, but I want to let you get it out first.
Sure.
Where did the thought come into your head that Trump's win had somehow changed stand-up comedy?
I was listening to Mark Maron's podcast a few weeks ago, and he had mentioned something about the Wanda Sykes incident up in Boston.
Tell the people what that was.
That was the Dennis Leary fundraiser. What is it, like Heroes Come Home or something like that?
Comics Come Home.
Comics Come Home, yeah. And she had gone on stage, and if I got the story straight, she'd gone on stage, and like I think the first thing she said was, well, they put an orangutan in the White House. And immediately just, like, everyone just kind of started booing her. And essentially she, like, walked off stage and, you know, was just got some coverage. You know, I just kind of started doing some research. And I found out about the Amy Schumer incident a few months ago. And I just thought
That's
to myself.
Where Amy had also lambasted Trump and people walked out of her show.
Yeah, and if you look at the video, she asked a Trump supporter onto the stage and just kind of asked him, like, why are you voting for Trump? And he kind of started giving him his reasons, and she started sort of grilling him and questioning him, like, on the stage in front of everybody. And some people, I guess, were uncomfortable with that, and they left.
Okay, so let me just stop you there, because this is what I find kind of internally contradictory in the message of your article.
Yeah.
Because the subheadline, and maybe you didn't write it, it says, emboldened by election results, Trump supporters are starting to make working comics nervous.
Right.
But what you're describing is comics making Trump supporters nervous. Like, you're describing comics lashing out at Trump supporters who are minding their own business, as opposed to, and using that as a premise for an article, was saying the Trump supporters are somehow rising up.
Right.
When you, and I mean, I'll give it away. In my experience, the Trump supporters are like, keep your head down. Don't let anybody know you voted for Trump. We don't want any trouble here.
No, they've been very vocal since the election.
Yeah,
vocal.
Not here.
Yeah,
well we're in New York, so we're in
in New York and elsewhere.
Not at the Comedy Cellar. We do 3,000 people a week or something. I haven't seen it once. But go ahead.
Well, there's some examples in the piece about Trump supporters, you know, giving it to the comics as well. So it's kind of a mix. And no, I didn't write the subheading. But you know, I heard about those couple of incidents, and I just thought, you know, these are people that paid to see a Wanda Sykes and Amy Schumer. These are big name people, and I'm friendly with comics. In the scene, club comics, and I just thought, you know, what's going on in the clubs with these comedians that nobody knows, that you just kind of show up to a club, you're there for a dinner and a show, and, you know, and these gentlemen come out, and ladies, of course, that aren't known. So what challenges are they facing?
Well, listen, I know Jim wants to say what happened to him, and I want him to be able to say something, but this is my perception of it. For 8 years, when Barack Obama was president, you could not go up there as a comedian and say anything negative about
Wrong. I did.
Well,
wrong.
You, if you, if you went up and called, well, obviously you couldn't call him an orangutan, but if you called him, hey, how do you like all those babies dying in Syria? How's that your Obama?
I did a joke about that.
What was your joke?
I said Barack Obama just outlined his plan for Syria, then he colored it, and that got a big laugh.
Mm-hmm. When did you do that?
Oh God, 2 years ago, 2 years ago, 3 years ago, and did it until I have still been doing it when it comes on to me. Sure, I did that.
Well, I don't want to contradict you because
I did a joke about Obama takes so long to do things that when he pardoned the Thanksgiving turkey, by the time he finished, it was a sandwich.
No, that's by the way, that's okay. That's a little different. Listen, this is what I think. Dan makes jokes about Trump. Everybody makes jokes about politics, and I'm an audience member, and I can laugh at a joke about any even a politician that I agree with. You know, from time to time, I hear a joke more now than ever. Where the first instinct is, I need to defend myself. Like, because you're not talking about Trump. You're talking about me. Like,
you should have to defend yourself.
And at that point, I'm like, this is not entertaining anymore. When let's say I'm an Obama supporter.
When you're the butt of the joke.
And when the point of the joke is, aren't Obama supporters idiots? Or how could anybody support this guy?
Right.
Then I feel like I'm watching Bill Maher. Oh, Bush is an asshole. Yeah.
Well, when I,
you know, like this is not, and the people who don't feel that way, like fuck this guy, you know.
Well, when I was conceiving the story, I'm friendly with Ted Alexandro, and you know, I remember a while ago, I was speaking to him during the time of Occupy when that was kind of hot and
Occupy Wall Street.
And Ted was doing, you know, some material on it, and he was very vocal about his support for Occupy. And I asked him, I was like, you know, how is this affecting your material? You know, and he told me, this was, again, it was years ago, he told me, you know, I always try and base my jokes in some kind of truth. And I wanted to kind of touch base with him on that and see if he was still, you know, bringing that to the table today with Trump. And, you know, that was the thing. I feel like when you look at the Amy Schumer video, when you look at Wanda Sykes and... Even Dana Carvey's new special, he comes out and goes, I want to talk about Donald Trump, and people just start voting. In all those instances, they didn't quite, you know, use that strategy. You know, not to say that everyone needs to adhere to what Ted Alexandro says, but you know, a lot of it was people just coming out on stage and just giving their opinion as opposed to really crafting a joke that, you know, had some thought behind it.
The audience doesn't want to hear your opinion unless it's a good joke.
Right, exactly.
Well, they do not.
They may want to hear Amy's opinion because Amy has kind of become also like a spokeswoman for modern feminism.
No,
stuff.
But I mean, I don't think they want to hear her opinion unless it's a good joke.
I don't want to bash Amy Schumer because I really like her, but if you watch the video, she's actually kind of condescending to the gentleman.
Okay, but
on
the premise of the article was that the audience is, that comedy is changing.
That was before the election.
Okay. Now, I think we can all agree that whatever era we're in, there are certain topics on stage that you just don't want to touch if you don't want to piss people off. And for example, when you know, when Christopher Reeve got into his accident, you couldn't touch it. You couldn't touch Christopher Reeve. This is non-political, but you couldn't touch...
I bet you Jim had a joke about it.
I did not.
Oh, okay.
maybe Gilbert
you know,
got
when,
I did not have a joke about Christopher Reeve.
When the war in Iraq, if you had gone up and said, you know... This is a bullshit war. And
I did. That's where I got in trouble.
Okay.
I had military guys wait for me after the show in Vegas.
So the point
is... That sounds like your dream come true, Jim.
They said... No, they were hostile. They said... This one guy said... See, because I did a joke right before we went into Iraq, and I said, you know, George Bush wants a war so bad. He said, Daddy had a war. I want a war. And it was something along those lines.
Yeah, that...
And some guy waited for me after the show and said, are you saying that I'm going into Iraq for no reason? And I was like, I'm just making a joke, dude. You know what I mean?
And there you go. So, you know, like, so in
let,
that
wait,
joke.
Let Dan finish his point.
But the point is, as we see, there's always been certain areas, if you're a comic, unless you are so famous that everybody in the audience is there to see you and knows your point of view already.
Bill Maher or like Louis Black, yes.
But if you're a guy like me and you take the audience as you find them, you have to be very careful if you want to have a good show where everybody has fun. And that's always been the case, before Trump, during Trump. So, I mean, your article seemed to imply that things were fundamentally different now that Trump has been elected. And you know, I see it as more as, well, there's always been certain topics that you better not touch if you don't want to piss off half the audience.
But this is, to me, I'm sorry, but
no, please.
This isn't... to me, something that's a topic.
This is Kristen Gonzalez, but by the way, her husband is Hispanic. She's not actually Hispanic, so she might actually have voted for Trump. Go ahead.
I did not vote for Trump.
He's a white Hispanic.
But and I made me lose my point. Oh, I don't think that Trump is something that you can touch. I actually think people are like, enough already. I mean, we've all spoken about how it's been the biggest media coverage and how, you know, jokes are made about him constantly. So it's, you do go to a show and not maybe want to hear that again and again. You're inundated with it.
Let him answer first, then I want to say.
Yeah, two things to that. One is that I made the point in the piece that people did make the observation that maybe for 18 months, you know, they were the butt ends of jokes while Trump is running the campaign, and now they're just kind of like, well, we won, so, you know.
It's almost like hack at this point, you know.
Right, so now it's just kind of like, we won, so here's the middle finger for you in the form of heckling. But the other thing, too, is I have to say that...
But I'm not getting the heckling. I'm getting that if you bring it up, you might piss off some Trump supporters.
Right.
But that's, again, that would have been the case for many, many different topics.
It was the case with me with Bush, definitely.
Yeah, you know, that joke that you told, at the time that you told, it would have annoyed me. I mean,
Which one?
Daddy wants a war, so I got a war. And my first thought would be, you know, what a shallow, like, that's, the, you know, I get it.
Because you get mad at everything.
No, because the thing is like.
You do.
No, I'm going to tell you why. Because the thing is, what we're just saying is like, if I support the war because of the UN weapons inspection problems, and because of the human rights abuses of Saddam Hussein, and because of the wanting to democratize the Middle East to avoid 9/11, all whatever the reason, and the belief that there were WMDs, which turned out to be, but putting myself in the head of a guy at that time, if I supported the war for those reasons, this jackass is telling me, no, you're a jackass for supporting the war because this is just because it's a spoiled brat wants a war.
That is absolutely nonsense. That is your own meltdown talking.
But that's right. But that's
you know, and all I was doing was making a joke about Bush.
Jim,
and his intentions.
I understand, but that's what I'm saying. Certain jokes to a thinking person, they take it a step further and they realize, like, if I were to speak to Jim about the war, he would think I'm a jackass for supporting the war. And therefore, I'm like, this guy is right. So now, if you're Lewis Black or Bill Maher, and people know that going into it, like, well, you know, that you paid your money, you knew what you were getting. But when you're paying $20 at the comedy club, listen, I'm not ruling it out. I'm saying understand that when you tell a joke like that, don't expect people to just roll right down their throats easily because you are criticizing them. You're telling them that what they believe is to be belittled, and they may not laugh along at that. Now, you may say, I'm an artiste, I don't want to serve the homeless the way it's normally served, and this is the way I want to tell my jokes.
There's like a competing vision of what comedy is. Some people think comedy is supposed to be challenging people, pushing boundaries, pushing buttons. Some people think it's, well, we're just there to entertain the public as we find them.
Both? Can it be both? I hope it's both. That's the way I try to write. I hope it's both.
Well, that's the way you.
I mean,
say
I don't want to. I mean, I'm a fan of dick jokes, and I'm a fan of my wife. What a cook! I didn't know toast had bones, and I'm a fan of socially.
That's funny.
Yeah, that's whose joke is that?
I know Rodney.
Yes.
Well, that's fine. I'm just saying.
Phyllis Diller said, "My mother-in-law is so fat she can only play Seek."
But, you know, very few...
Golden age.
You know, most comics here don't really get that I've noticed anyway, the Comedy Cellar, too political. Even Ted Alexandro, whose views are extreme in real life, on stage doesn't really go there.
Well, let me tell you...
Hold that thought. First of all, Ted is a master, because Ted, whose views are extreme, never makes me feel... what I'm describing.
Because he doesn't go there.
I think maybe he does, but he just, because of his approach, doesn't come off as kind of like so far left,
There's no smugness to him.
Right.
Does he have that really gets into his political beliefs?
I don't remember.
He himself said on this show.
I cited one in the story.
He himself said on this very show that he really doesn't get too into it on stage.
But a comic said to me recently, if I make a Trump voter or extreme right winger in the audience feel defensive, good. That's part of the goal.
Well, I spoke to William Stevenson.
Who, was that me?
Yes, that was you.
I don't wanna... Well, again, that's how and, Jim and sees it, comedy.
Right, and... but you understand, now, I'm a club owner.
Yeah.
And I'm extremely opinionated about politics.
I'm not going to make them feel that comfortable for that long. Just maybe after one or two jokes. I don't go on tirade.
Right, but you say that's part. I just want to make clear that, that may be part of your goal, but that's the point where your goal diverges with the goal of the person who owns the club. Yeah. Because I'm not interested in anybody feeling defensive. I'm interested in people having a good time.
Well,
period.
And I think that, you know, it starts at the top. And, you know, I spoke to William Stevenson, who's one of your prime hosts.
Is that what he told? No, I'm kidding.
And, well, no. No, but he's, you know, he said that, you know, at some point he you know, called out, you know, where are you from? And just by asking that question, where are you from, the person got tense. And he felt bad, you know. He said that, you know, that now what he does is he kind of turns that into a joke where he says, you know, now's the part of the show where I ask, where are you from? But I don't want to know. You could be from the wrong state.
Well,
you know?
but again, that's no different than after Zimmerman. There was a couple of incidents in Florida. It was Zimmerman and a couple of other crazy things happened in Florida at the, around that same time. And if somebody said they were from Florida, you would feel weird. There would be tension. So I think that... Again, I don't think there's anything fundamentally different. I don't think we're in uncharted territory here. I think for right now, there's some, you know, there's a lot of sensitivity with regard to the division in America and Trump versus, you know, Hillary. But I don't think fundamentally we're in different territory. I don't think the nature of comedy has changed. I think there's now another subject that we have to tread with care.
Well, it's different for me because I've never been nobody. I mean, I've had problems with audiences for 20 years if they don't like a joke that I do, but I've never, nobody's ever threatened to fire me, and nobody's ever tried to get me fired, and nobody's ever stormed the stage before trying to hurt me. And that both of those things happened within the last 2 months.
Well, tell the story. What happened?
But those things have happened to other comics over
the years. Let's hear what happened to Jim.
Well, I mean, I was on a ship, and I made the most lame Trump joke, and because I was asking where people were from, and a lot of people were from South America and Puerto Rico, and then I said, "Wow, there's so many Latinos on this ship. Donald Trump is trying to deport it." That joke is the level of a Tonight Show joke.
Yes.
Some woman went up and tried to get me fired, and really tried to get me fired. You know, wanted me.
Was this on a ship?
That week, yeah. Uh-huh.
Because on the ships, they're notorious for trying to get people fired for any little
thing. For anything,
thing.
Yeah. But then in a club, somebody, this was in Vegas, you know, somebody, I was making a joke about how when Donald Trump talks, he looks like a talking rectum. Like if an asshole could actually speak, that's what, you know, like, we're going to build a wall. It looks like a talking rectum. And then there's
I'll
a bunch of stuff
I'll defer to you on
that,
Jim.
Yeah, exactly. Thank you. I know what I'm talking about.
Defer your expertise on
exactly.
that.
Exactly. But somebody, this young guy and his girlfriend, they were like in their 20s, and they ran to the stage, and these two guys got up out of the audience and pulled them away from me.
All right, let me ask you this. First of all, the first joke I think is funny. Second joke, but
they both work. They've worked for years.
Try going on stage and saying Obama looks like a talking rectum and see if you don't get exactly
he doesn't look like a talking rectum.
I'm just saying, or the equivalent, whatever. You don't find he does. I believe some people might.
I could make up something about Obama.
I'm just saying that if you were to speak with that kind of disrespect, I mean, it's the most disrespect, right? Say somebody looks like a talking rectum. If you said my wife looks like a talking rectum, I'd be like, you know, I have to get the security guy to fight you. I'm saying this is you have
the
to,
disrespect
you
is
have
earned
to,
by
you
the
have,
way.
You have to well, in your opinion, but you have
yes, and I'm the one that's right, I'm the I'm one saying, that is behind the fucking mic.
But in order to say that we're living in a new era, you have to imagine the counterfactual was what if somebody had said the same thing about Barack Obama? And I'm telling you. Greg wants to say something. Go ahead, Greg. Greg we'll
yeah,
go.
No, it's different because Barack Obama, whether you like him or not, is dignified. He's dignified.
You're bringing your opinion into it.
No, it's not an opinion.
It's not an opinion.
It's not an opinion.
It's not an opinion.
Trump has shown.
It's a fact.
Has shown that he has a real lack of dignity. Yeah. I mean, his Twitter feed reflects that. Obama is an adult, and he acts like an adult, so it wouldn't make sense if you said he's a talking asshole.
But
if you say Trump's a talking rectum.
Okay, but
it sounds to me like you're trying to normalize him.
An insulting Trump, there's a certain accuracy to it.
Okay, but we're trying to answer the question, are we living in a different era?
No, I don't think we're living in a different era. In fact, I think as time goes by, when Trump becomes president, and he's actually in office for a little while, it's going to become more acceptable to make fun, to shit on him again.
Listen to me. This is where you guys have I think, are losing the argument. You want me to accept as a given, you want me to stipulate that people who think Trump is an asshole are correct, and people who think Obama is an asshole are incorrect. And I'm telling you, well, let's say
exactly.
Exactly. Yeah. And I'm telling you that there are people out there, for instance, maybe one of the 700 people who got to keep their job at Carrier, who might love Donald Trump. And if you were to make a joke like that, they'd take it very personally. And the people out there who love Obama.
You know what? They're letting a lot slide if they love Obama.
And let's say somebody who was promised that if they liked their health care, they could keep it, and then can't keep their health care.
Again, it's different than we're not talking about policy. We're not talking about policies here. We're talking about a character issue.
I'm not saying you're going to say the exact same joke. I'm saying this.
But no, we're not.
To level the same amount of obvious disrespect to the president or the president or any human being is going to upset the people who don't dislike that guy.
Bill Clinton took a lot of abuse from comedians.
We're not here to argue the merits of Trump and the merits of Obama. We're here to argue whether we're in a fundamentally different era.
Well, that's comedically. But that's what they suck. As I said, if you were to hold on.
That's, I'm agreeing with you.
Right, but this is just to understand how we got there. I'm like, well, if you would said the same thing, similar type things about Obama four years ago,
you would also get a hostile reaction.
And they're so like, no, you couldn't, because you would never say that about Obama, because Obama doesn't. Anybody who told a joke like that about Obama would be wrong.
No.
Like, but anybody tells a joke like that about Trump, justified.
No, because Trump is an easier target. If Obama had more that you can make fun of, people would do it. People aren't not making fun of Obama because they're afraid of not being politically incorrect. He's just less of a target. He just shows a certain amount of dignity, and he hasn't done anything that's really.
But
that you can really
again,
make fun of. And if there was something there, people would be on top of it.
Hold on, one at a time. Let Dan talk.
Once again, this is not the argument or the discussion we're having. We're not here to argue whether Obama's dignified and Trump is deserving of criticism. We're here to argue whether there's a fundamental change in stand-up comedy, whether audiences are more hostile, more prone to violence. Okay? And I agree with Noam in saying that no. During every era, there's things that if you said them, you might be physically assaulted, you'd definitely be verbally assaulted, and definitely people would walk out. So the Rolling Stone article that the gentleman, Mike Stahl, was it?
Mike Stahl, yeah.
Mike Stahl.
And I'm hardly a gentleman.
Was the premise of the article, as I read it, was that something fundamentally different is happening right now. And that's how I read the article. Was that your intention or is that your premise in the article? And if so, why? Because I think that in all eras, as I said, comics have to be careful of certain topics.
Yeah, I think that first of all, you have to remember that my sort of status in this whole thing is that of reporter. You know, so you know, looking at
tell him what happened to John Laster.
I can get to that short too, but. I went out there and I just wrote to, you know, some people that I was friendly with and said, hey, what's going on in the clubs? Has anything changed? And every single person wrote back and said, yeah, it's a lot more tense. It's way different than anything else that I've experienced before. So I am not, you know, my story isn't, you know, I'm not trying to bring any kind of bias to it. I'm just making the point that every single comedian.
I want to underline, Mike, we all like you. Yeah. You're a nice guy.
No, I'm just making the point that.
Okay, but
we're just trying to provoke discussion.
First of all, I myself have not noticed. I want to see him cry.
And to answer your question, then just keeping that in mind, I think my personal opinion and just kind of, you know, having the opportunity to talk to these folks. I think there's just kind of like an underlying tone. It's hard to explain. Like, I understand what you're saying. Like, if you made a joke about Obama, if you made a joke about Bush, but I think that with Trump, with Trump supporters, I think maybe some of these folks that I spoke to, there's just this kind of underlying real venom to their heckling, to their words, to their approach.
I have not.
I think that's more.
I have not noted.
Can we ask you a question on the air?
Sure.
Come on, Clifford.
Can I just, one, just really
real quickly. Real quick, real
quick. I have personally not noticed any difference. People used to, you know, I once mentioned Bill Clinton years ago when somebody said, fuck that draft dodger. And that's pretty right. potent stuff. I've not noticed any difference in heckling or in the attitude of the audience in general. And I talk about Trump in a very light way, but I haven't noticed any difference.
My biggest criticism of you is your research, and I'm going to get to that in a second. But Jim Norton, can you – this is Michael. He wrote the article in Rolling Stone magazine about the stand-up comedy, Trump's effect on stand-up comedy. Did you see it?
I didn't read it.
My story for Rolling Stone is just about how, in general, kind of comedians in clubs sort of feel like in this sort of age of Trump, especially since he's gotten elected, there's kind of a tenseness within the crowd, more heckling in general from Trump supporters and just kind of – just this general sense of discomfort when politics is brought up and Trump is brought up that, you know, really kind of creates a tension within the crowd.
I've noticed he's very polarizing, but yeah. I noticed that if you say you like Trump, people go like, oh, like you get a reaction from that too. Mm-hmm. So I think either side you take, whatever there's more of in the crowd are going to give you shit about it. I haven't noticed it more from his, like if I say like, yeah, I don't dislike Donald Trump, I don't get big cheers from people. They usually get like, oh. And if I say something shitty about it, right. then people kind of groan. I think it's across the board. People.
Well, this is what we're discussing here today. Do you notice a change now, or is this the way comedy's always been?
Yeah, people are always. I think this is the most polarizing. I don't notice any big change. Right. Like, no, I don't think there's a giant.
You think
change.
It's always but, been that the
yeah,
case
we've always
with
been
political,
polarizing.
You know, with yes. political.
But when
issues.
You said this is the yeah. most polarizing, I think that kind of supports one thing that I just said about that just kind of extra added oomph, this underlying tone. I think to. You know, Trump backers or even, you know, and a lot of the comedians, they said the same thing, that it really kind of just goes, even just if you bring up politics in general, there's just this like, ugh, like they're just tired of kind of hearing about it.
Yeah. I mean, I found Hillary yeah. backers to be very unhappy, though, as I would be, too, if I lost it. I would be happy if I, you know what I mean? It's like I both of them are the same to me. There's no difference. Right. Trump supporters are not these monsters heckling comedians while Hillary supporters are being great. The whole country is filled with a bunch of self-centered babies. So whatever side you're taking, the other side gets mad.
That's the point I'm making. That if you were to come after Barack Obama 6 years ago, people would not like that.
Yeah, if you bash Michelle Obama on stage, they'd hate you for it. I mean, they really would. And if you attack Hillary and go, Trump is great. If you're somewhere, you know, maybe in Arkansas, they'd love you. But downstairs, no. Half the crowd would hate your guts, or if not more.
Oh, way more, yeah.
What were the questions you had about?
I criticized your research because, first of all, and listen.
Well, we don't need to. The poor boy has been really.
No, please, I'm here.
The poor boy was nice enough to come down.
He's
only
nice
for Gnome to trash him.
Let's pivot on what you just said.
We don't ambush here.
No, he's not ambushing. He's giving me a fair warning.
I don't have to. I see television shows all the time where journalists write opinion pieces, and they're called.
This
on
is not
their,
an opinion piece.
What is this? This is a factual piece?
It's not an opinion piece. It's a reported piece.
No, it's an opinion
and
piece.
And I also want to remind you that you're free to critique Noam on the quality of the hummus. So, in other words, well, nobody does their job perfectly, and Noam is no exception.
It's fascinating what you just said.
Well, it's not an editorial.
Well, let's hold that thought because I want to talk about that because that's actually the most interesting thing of all, and that's actually what I didn't want to. That's where I was holding my fire.
Sure.
But all the time, people write opinion pieces, and they're called on television shows, whether it's on Rachel Maddow or Hannity or whatever it is, and the host, you know, grills them on it. Mm-hmm. So I don't...
Jim loved the kebab.
If I
love the kebabs.
Dudes, if I bring a guy who wrote...
All right, but an anus joke, you had to get in there.
If a guy...
maybe I wasn't a great, but you've stuck in jokes too. Okay, I'm sorry. Go ahead. No, you're getting so upset.
Let him finish.
If a guy writes an article that I take issue with, if I'm respectful, why can't I confront him?
I'm
going to call the guy in and say, well, I thought it was a great article. Let's talk about how great it was. I agree with every word.
We do that sometimes.
No. We've disagreed with him. I just think maybe he's down. We don't want to kick him.
All right, I'm not down.
I'm not down at all. I'm having a great time.
The reason I criticize research is because, and this is not egotistical, you didn't call me. I mean, that's it. Like I own the one of the most important. Maybe you call some other comedy club owners. I didn't see them, but it's like,
I did, as a matter of fact.
Did they give you a quote? Did they?
Well, you know, one thing. He said
Jim.
Jim said as well. He's like, I wish you'd talk to me. you know, I only had space for 1,500 words. There's only so much reporting you can do. I mean, you know.
No, but what I'm saying, because yeah. you chose, for instance, like Ida Rodriguez, and she works here, and I don't like her. But she...
You don't like her.
I do like her.
Oh, you do like her. But, gotcha. Yeah.
But she... this is not the first time I've heard her accuse an audience that didn't accept her of being motivated by race. Yeah. And so what she's saying here about supposedly what's new about Trump, she basically made this point a year ago.
Yeah.
Before Trump wasn't even the nominee, and she's an anchor thing there.
If I told you I reached out to Nick DiPaolo and he turned me down, would that help?
No, actually, I knew that.
Oh, you knew that?
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah. So then, like, James Mattern says, and I see fewer minorities in the crowd. Mm-hmm. Well, that's ridiculous. It's truly ridiculous. There is no suppression of minority people in our crowds. I mean, it's absurd. And then Helen Hong says, I don't even know her, but she says, hey, guys.
She's an Asian woman.
Hey, guys, does anyone know what to pack for an internment camp? This right. is it. And the audience responded negatively. Of course they're going to respond negatively.
Also, by the way, that was her opening joke.
Yeah. I'm criticizing the research. William, obviously, I told you so the other way. And then John Lasseter, the last story.
Yeah.
John Lasseter is John Lasseter still on stage? Steve, can we get John Lasseter? Hey, John. You know who this is?
What's up, brother?
Okay, who has to leave to...
No, wait, Kristen will move over.
I'm good.
John, can you tell the story firsthand, what happened to you in the Rolling Stone piece? Or
Yeah.
Tell it real fast.
Yeah, give us the Cliff Note version.
Yes, we'll do the Cliff Note version.
Better than characterizing it or even using the characterization in the story. Let's hear it directly from you.
No. You know what? I got off stage. My buddy was...
Where was
this? Hosting. We were at Gotham. I tried to leave that out, but it's
okay.
All gravy.
That's okay.
And so it was after the show.
You were Gotham?
Yeah. No. And this guy walks up. It's after the show, probably 10 minutes after the show, and we're just talking. We knew something was funny because immediately after the show, he said, oh, my God, man, you were hysterical, and you were black. Right. So, you know, we kind of gave him the look. Me, Veter, Norman was down there, and then, you know, we kind of break off and start talking. And he literally says, yeah, man, you know, Trump is president now. You know, I think that we all need to start reevaluating, you know, what's politically correct. He said, you know, I don't know if it's a bad idea, you know, if I'm not able to call you nigger now. And he just said that, and I just blacked out. And I was just about to hit him by the grace of God. And Ann Harris was standing there. I put her name in the story, too. And almost bumped into her, but I... So that kind of made me come to, like, God, I can't hit this guy. But I was so annoyed. And I actually told Veter, and Veter was disgusted. And then I just made my way out of there because I could still feel the boil. You know what I mean?
Now, was he fucking with you, or was he being overly familiar?
I think he was being overly familiar. But I also think that he really meant, like, hey, let's talk about this. You know, like, he'd been yearning to do it. Like, hey, like, maybe we should rethink this conversation.
Any white guy who thinks that he can look at a stranger and say nigger is out of his fucking mind.
Of course.
First of all, I don't know if I want to applaud him, but at least I want to make mention that Jim said the N-word in full.
Who, me?
Yes, and that's certainly something that is not often done nowadays. Normally we say the N-word.
Did you say I want to applaud him?
I said I don't want. I want to applaud him. I said I maybe applaud. I don't know what I want to do, but I want to mention.
Let me the fact that
of an intelligent discussion about the appropriateness or lack of the word.
Would you rather hear John? Since you're here and you brought it up, would you rather hear me when using the term say nigger or say the N-word?
And he said it again, by the way.
Say the N-word. And the reason I say that is just like with the guy in the basement. Like, it wasn't a conscious thought. Like, I had already measured him to break his jaw, to be honest with you. I know it's a laughing matter to you, but to me it's not, because that meant I got to spend I got to spend Thanksgiving in jail.
Yeah, yeah.
So when I hear it come out of white people's mouths, there's a visceral reaction that you don't know,
okay.
And you might not know it's coming.
That's why I asked you
so,
the question.
Right. So if your glasses end up over there, you're like, hey, what the fuck just happened? I don't know either.
Right.
You know what I mean? I just think it's inappropriate at all times.
Can I retweet the N-word?
Oh, come on, guys. This is not what we're making light of the
situation.
So what I'm
making light, me known with all the anus jokes.
I've told one anus. How can I have? And whatever.
In reference to that, though, to answer your question, I've always thought that my problem with it is there's always been intrapersonal communication amongst groups. You know what I mean? Like, take, for example, my coach could call me an asshole or throw a basketball at my face. But that's within the confines of the team. I feel like with the N-word, it's the same thing. Or with women. Or with gay guys that grab women's tits.
This one's it.
You know what I mean? There's always been communication in groups that exists within groups that we don't cross those lines.
That are John, they're allowed to get away with it.
Hold on, everybody. Yeah. This one I have seen many times, to my extremely uncomfortableness, white guys being overly familiar with black guys, and especially when they've been drinking and use the N-word, or even if they don't use the N-word, just make an inappropriate joke about being black that you just want to smack him.
Right.
I've seen that many, many times. I saw it when I was in Russia last week. Someone we all know made a joke. I was like, oh my God, what the fuck is the matter with you? And he offended everybody.
Right.
Question, but usually when I see it, they're really, it's because they want to be close to you.
They want to bond.
They want to bond with you, as opposed to what he was describing in his article, like these nasty Trump voters who want to fuck with you. And that's why I thought his story, and that's why it's good to hear from the horse's mouth, was not actually evidence of what you were describing.
But I think it points to a comfort level. It points to a comfort level that the guy had.
But I've seen these things before, is what I'm saying. I've seen these things before.
Okay, well, but I think that because Trump made it in that situation.
Yeah.
I mean, John, you were there, so tell me if I'm wrong. But I think in that situation, because Trump was in, that man was measuring a new sort of comfort level. He was taking advantage of a new comfort level.
John says he would have never said that.
He would have never said that if Hillary had won. Yeah. He was trying to see if he could stretch his boundaries a little bit.
Was you think you took him for a Trump voter?
Definitely.
Okay.
Well, I think we've discussed this that there's no doubt that certain people feel emboldened by
Trump.
Thank
you, John.
And I've had the argument before. How common is that phenomenon? But no doubt, certain people have been emboldened by Trump. Whether or not that means there's a fundamental difference in comedy club atmospheres. Is a separate question.
I don't think people have been emboldened by Trump. Maybe this particular guy was, but I don't see. I mean, for me to believe that it's a trend in comedy, as I said, doing thousands of people a week. If I have not seen it, if no one has commented, I'm at the comedian table every night. Not one night has any comedian commented, "Hey, do you see what's going?" Like, not once. And I'm supposed to say, well, no, but it's true. It's very true. It's just happening everywhere except in the most important comedy club, in the busiest comedy club, where all the best comedians, where the funny comedians are. It's happening to the comedians who never really were going over so well to begin with, who are telling jokes which are really kind of harsh. And, that's why I'll let you get back to your point, but that's why when you say it's a reporting piece as opposed to an editorial piece, I say, no, it seems like an editorial piece to me in the sense that you had a point you wanted to make, and then you chose evidence of it, whereas a reporting piece would have somebody on the other side. A New York Times piece would say, so-and-so, blah, blah, blah. However, the owner of the Comedy Cellar disagrees. That's a reporting piece tries to present people on both sides of an issue. An editorial piece leads you down the garden path so you agree by the end with the point of view of the author. And that's what your piece did. It's an editorial.
Here's my retort. If I'd written to all the comedians that I'd reached out to and none of them said that this was an issue, the story wouldn't exist. So that's why I say that this is a reported piece. I reached out to, a certain number of people within a certain amount of time and wrote a certain amount of words that I was allotted, to make this point. That's all. So I'm reporting
ultra left wing comedians.
But I'm reporting.
How do you know they're ultra left wing?
Ted Alexandro.
And like I said,
Ida
I reached
Rodriguez,
out.
I know them.
And like I said, I reached out to Nick DiPaolo and he turned me down.
Right.
But the fact that
he turned you down.
Yeah.
Is not evidence that your opinion is correct in this. It just means you didn't get any data from him.
I mean, I have eight comedians all telling me that they're experiencing the same phenomenon.
No, you don't, because we've gone through this. William Stevenson, many of them are saying the opposite. William is saying that people are afraid to say that they support Trump. William wasn't describing Trump supporters being adamant. Ted Alexandro is saying, Ted Alexandro didn't even tell any story of anything that happened. Helen Hong starts with this hey guys, we're in internment camp, and she says, I know I shouldn't have done that. I spent the rest of my day, because of course it's
I wanted to make the point, the same thing with the Ted Alexandro quote. I wanted to make the point that there are comedians who I respect so much and admire so much.
Yeah.
There's a craft to the art, and that these folks, that when they're going up and doing their thing, there's so much thought that goes into it. And, you know, look, they're human, then they, you know, quote unquote, make mistakes as well. You know, and Helen Hong, you know, kind of said, like, that, you know, that was sort of my fault. But at the same time, you know, to have that, again, to use a word that I used before, you know, that venom kind of come out, I think, you know, in her mind, she thought that was something new. That was something different for Oz as well out in Los Angeles.
Now, let me put it in a gentler way. I think that you missed the forest for the trees. I think you were misled by some people who were rationalizing certain events. However, I can tell you with great authority, as I just said, that being here, which is kind of the epicenter, I have not heard one person mention what it is that you're talking about. And I, as a matter of fact, I remember when the story, this is not the first time I've heard the John Lasseter story. I was there when he told the story a couple weeks ago.
Yeah.
But when he told it to me a couple weeks ago, he didn't associate it with the election of Donald Trump. I'm not even sure it was after the election.
Well, the guy said, you know, because Trump is in, we have to rethink things. Yeah,
But that's, I'm just saying he didn't, I don't know. It wasn't presented to me that way.
There's only so many people. You know, you only have so much time to do a story. There's only so many people you can talk to. And I wanted to focus on the experience. You know, asking about, you know, why didn't I interview a club owner? I wanted to ask the experience of the people that are in the clubs on stage that are feet from, you know, the people in the crowd, as opposed to, hey, Wanda Sykes and Amy Schumer are experiencing this, and they're in big theaters.
Yeah, but they were going after the audience. The audience wasn't going after them. They were going after the audience.
Right.
Which is not what you're... That's what I'm saying. And then with Lasseter,
I tried to make.
Did you ask Lasseter if the guy was trying to be friendly with him or if the guy was fucking with him? Because if the guy's trying to be friendly with him, it's not an evidence of the audience members fucking with the comedians. You know?
I reported what John Lasseter told me.
All right.
That's what he told me. So.
Jim is raising his hand.
Dan,
so.
Then Jim. Dan, and then Jim. Go ahead. Sorry.
Well, even if we assume that the John Lasseter incident was motivated by hatred or motivated by racism that was enabled by Trump, it's still one incident, and I have not experienced any real fundamental difference in the audience in what goes on.
Have you heard
on.
A buzz about it from other comedians?
No, haven't. Okay, James? Jim.
Well, I experienced the same thing during Sarah Palin. Whenever I would make jokes about her, somebody would yell at me. And what I've been trying to do...
Your venom comes out.
No, it's
Palin,
not.
Palin,
no,
Bush,
no, no, no,
Trump.
No, 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 no,
Jim,
no, no.
Be honest
no,
now.
No, no, no. Listen
These
to
are
me.
The people you hate.
Listen
it
to
comes
me.
Through.
Listen to me. Yeah. Listen to me.
No, I'm...
You
not,
are
I'm
jumping
not.
All over me like you are the most thin-skinned... You have to calm the fuck down. Just let me get my goddamn story out.
Okay.
Okay? No, you don't know what the jokes were. It was a mistake on my part when I said that at a Palin rally where they wear T-shirts that say "I'm with stupid" pointed at themselves. Now that was a mistake. You are correct about that. However, what I've been trying to do, and this is based on another conversation that you and I had, and I've been trying to do it since the election.
Yeah.
Because when I work on a ship or in Vegas, I would say a good third to half of my audience, I can assume, voted for Trump. Okay?
Yes.
I want those people to... Now, you will. This may surprise you, my dear, but I want those people to think I'm funny, too.
I love that.
I want those... They buy my CDs, and they buy my books just like everybody else. And so what's been interesting is that I have been writing jokes about the whole Trump phenomenon and the whole atmosphere in the country that has a point of view, and it's obvious that I do not approve of Trump, but still is a good enough joke that they will laugh.
That's the challenge.
And that has been a really interesting challenge.
Yeah, that's right.
Here's one.
Wait, I let you talk for a long time, and I'm going to psychoanalyze you. I bet you do want 100% of the people in the audience to love you.
I want them all to laugh at me.
And to laugh at you and want to see you again.
Yeah.
And you also have this burning resentment towards Donald Trump.
That's
and
very true.
And you want to let that out.
Yes.
And,
but
and,
in a
and,
way, that is a good joke.
Right, right.
Because
and when,
if
and when,
it's not
and
a good joke,
hold on, I get it. And
say.
When it gets the better of you sometimes and it comes out a little harsher than you would like it to, like I'm a stupid, I bet when you go home you say, fuck, I shouldn't have done that.
That's
I got, I got it under control.
You are correct.
I know these college musicians go through this.
Yeah, sure.
You know, they want to do it on their own terms, but then and so we all fail. And the challenge of great art is to do it on your own terms while still winning over the audience.
Right.
And the challenge of
exactly.
a club owner is to make sure that the audience is won over, because I'm in business to please the audience.
Like I just I like for example, what I'll do as a writer is I will start from the point of view of what I want to say, and then write. Like I wanted to make a joke about all the bigots in America.
Yeah.
And there's no art to saying, boy, this country's full of bigots. There's no art to that.
Yeah.
And what I say now is, because the audience loves it whenever you praise the troops or whenever you praise America. You know what I mean? They just love it. It's hacky, but they love it. So I say. And this gets a big laugh, and I say, there's a lot of wonderful people in this country, aren't there? They're just wonderful people. And they all, yeah, yeah, and they applaud. And then I say, there's also a ton of racist rednecks, religious fanatics, reactionaries, gun nuts, conspiracy theories, and drooling mongoloids, and that's just my family.
And so it that works.
Yes, it works totally.
Yeah.
But it still gets the point out.
Right.
You see what I mean?
Yes, yes. I just,
I did 2 days after the election, I said, like so many of you, for the last 2 days, I have been physically ill, I threw up, I cried, I can't stop shaking, and then I found out I'm pregnant.
Yeah.
And so it got a big
But obviously I don't need to tell you what you do there. Because when you're saying Mongolian people are and they say, oh, that's just my family, they're that's funny. Okay.
Exactly. See? Yeah.
Yeah.
That's what you gotta do.
I think that, you know, some of what Jim's saying is it again points to a point that I tried to make in the piece, was that, you know, there's thought behind these jokes. You know, these aren't things like with the internment camp joke from Helen Hong, you know, where she even kind of admits, you know, she just sort of threw it out. And John Laster in the piece, you know, I quoted him. He said, hey, you know, I'm not even doing political humor right now because, you know, I really need to, like, you know, think on it and wrap my head around really how I feel and then, you know, hit people with it. So my point is, I think also, too, you know, I wrote this piece, you know, just within the month after, you know, Trump was elected. So, you know, you're really getting the fiery, you know, barbs coming out of people, you know, maybe in 2, 3, 4 months, you know, things are going to be different where there's more thought put into the jokes, like the one you made about, you know, sort of about the country, but also about your family.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, more people, even if they are Trump supporters and they're hearing, quote unquote, anti-Trump jokes, you know, maybe they'll still feel comfortable in the club because these comedians have kind of maybe gotten over their anger, and now they're being more tactful.
Well, during
in their
the
jokes,
whole
you know,
during
I
the whole section,
so this also is within again,
it's
the
also,
first month.
It's also
that's
good if you go
on.
After your own side. Like during the whole election, I did a series of what I call Friar's Roast jokes about every candidate. So Bernie Sanders is such an old Jew; his campaign headquarters was in a pyramid.
You didn't say Jew, did you?
Yes, I did. Oh, okay. I said oh, it's old Jew. Yes, and then
well,
I said Hillary Clinton is like herpes; we can't get rid of her. You know, Hillary Clinton's like the last girl at the bar. You're not really attracted to her, but you're really horny, so you take her home and fuck her anyway. And Ted Cruz hates gay people so much his church doesn't even have an organist. Shit like that. You know what I mean? So those all worked. And then when I get to Trump, I say, I look at Donald Trump and I think, I owe Sarah Palin an apology. And that gets a huge laugh. Huge laugh. And
that's
thank you. And I do that. But, you know, I think a lot of the time, if the audience doesn't know, I mean, like when I talk about being a gay married person, they're pretty much going to have an idea of where I come from. But if the audience really doesn't know who I voted for, I've done a really good job, I think.
Yes, I agree.
I
don't know if
and
that's
this is where this is why I wanted to come on, because I don't think you realize that about me.
I do realize. I think I even said when I was in Russia, Jim and I had a heated Facebook message.
That's because I had to delete you because it was so hostile.
It wasn't hostile.
It was totally fucking hostile.
It was no. I just disagreed with you. Listen, some people like Jim think they can put stuff out on Facebook and like. That if you're not part of the choir that he's preaching to, you're supposed to just stay quiet.
No. You're the only one I delete because you're hostile.
I'm the only friend you have who doesn't think exactly the same way as you.
Oh, that is absolutely not
true. How many right-wing conservative friends do you have? List them.
Are you a right-wing conservative?
Nick DiPaolo.
Are you a right-wing conservative?
Well, Nick DiPaolo
is not. On social issues.
Nick DiPaolo is not a friend. I think it might be instructive, Michael, if you have any future articles about comedy that you're thinking about, maybe you run them by Noam at this time.
Well, yeah, you know, please, let's exchange
at
our information.
At the end of the day, I'm upset he wasn't quoted.
I hope we didn't
upset
you.
Do you have
you.
Any
no, not at all. Okay.
Comedy articles that you're working on or that other ideas that you're thinking about doing?
Is yes.
This sort of your beat.
Yeah, well, I wouldn't say that, but I love comedy, and I do have one or two other ideas.
Well, we certainly appreciate your support. I once again would caution you to run it by Noam first.
Sure, you don't have to run anything by me.
Well, but Noam is very logical, hyper-logical, infuriatingly so at times. He does run the most important comedy club in New York, and some might say the
world.
I
also could have gotten DiPaolo to give you a quote.
And he could be a very valuable resource, and had you come to him with this article prior to writing it, obviously you'd have gotten quite an interesting point of view,
sure.
And you might have gotten some other points of view as well. So.
Like I said, I think I did reach out to a couple other club owners, not you know the vaunted you know owner
well,
of
but you,
comedy.
You probably
Cellar.
You know, don't say that because that's not the way I meant it.
Yeah.
You don't know
how
the reality
much.
Is. The Comedy Cellar is very important. Club.
You're not going to get any disagreement.
It's a fabulous club. It's the best club.
It's huge.
It's the best club. It's only the best people perform here. It's only the best. The people.
But
the best people.
My point is worth repeating is that I just felt that I wanted to focus on the experience of club comics, which to me I think is very different from an Amy Schumer, from a Louis C.K., from a Jim Gaffigan.
That I agree with.
Yeah.
And Amy Schumers and the Louis C.K.'s, as their audience comes to see them and kind of does want to have their opinions. Especially Louis, he's straddling philosopher and comedian now. So people, Greg has one thing to say.
I think also certain comedians don't really do political stuff, and then when they do it, the audience might get a little bit. Set back by it because they're like, you know, just do your act. We don't want to hear your opinions, kind of thing. But you know, if it was a like Amy's not a political comedian. I mean, neither is Louis. Louis talks about himself. He doesn't really talk about politics. So it's so when they start to talk about Trump, they're kind of leaving their set to kind of give their opinion. So you know what I'm saying?
I know exactly what you're saying. Although Louis wrote that really nice piece about Trump, which I thought was very well written and did not offend a lot of people. But anyway,
he wrote a nice piece about.
No. I mean, nicely written piece
nicely
about.
Written.
Oh, thank God!
Anti-Trump.
You mean the one where he called him Hitler?
The one
where he called him Hitler. Oh, that was a nice piece.
We didn't call him Hitler.
Only
he did use the H word.
We can all rest easy that Gilbert Gottfried won't be addressing this issue.
How would he sound if he did?
Well, I should have come up with something before the show. That idea just came to me. But he would say, yes, Donald Trump. Yes, Donald Trump is going to get rid of the spics and...
Jewish grandfather on the edge there.
I think we're finished.
And we'll have no more problems.
Hey, Noam, where can your comedians be followed?
Anyway,
where can,
yes, go ahead. Go ahead, Jim.
I am at Comic Jim David on Twitter. Follow me or harass me. Send me death threats like I've gotten in the past.
I don't give my Twitter because there's no point to it. Nobody's following me. And it's just, you know.
At Dan Natterman.
It happens to be at Dan Natterman. I do want to say, instead of a plug, I would like to take this time to say that this is what I'm talking about with the Comedy Cellar Radio Show.
This was a good show.
This is what I'm talking about. This is inside shit. You're not going to get it anywhere else. Really getting into the nitty gritty of what goes on here at the Comedy Cellar, and there's always something interesting going on.
I did fail though. I didn't get Jim David to walk off the show as he threatened to, but but anyway.
Well,
you're a pussy.
It was a.
Go ahead,
it was not a legitimate threat,
Kristen.
I still have my maiden though. I'm
at Kristen Montella.
Montella.
I think Twitter's really out. It's all Instagram now.
Yeah, I think
and it's all young girls in bikinis on Instagram and. I know that Montella doesn't do that.
No.
Do you want to give your Instagram?
I don't have Instagram. I can't stand to see my face on camera. I hate it. The first time I saw myself on television, I thought, people may be eating.
Or Snapchats.
I would also like to ask Jim, if given Snapchat. What John Lasseter said, if you've reevaluated your decision to use the entire N-word rather than just saying the N-word.
Oh, yeah, I guess so.
No. You didn't do anything wrong.
No. I had a great joke.
He did anything wrong is not the point. The point is John Lasseter had a visceral negative reaction to Jim using that word.
That's an exaggeration.
I had a great joke where I used the N-word, and like
the
Marina
N-word.
Franklin loved it, and all the black people in the audience, they got it. But the white people got so mad, I had to cut the joke.
That's often the case, actually. That the one removed, or even because they don't have the confidence in themselves to allow it.
Yeah.
So they have in general principle they just shut it down. Mm-hmm. Whereas someone who, you know, like you can, whatever.
It's very, very tricky. Most comedians, certainly on stage, won't use it. I might use it off stage in a certain context.
I think that...
Certainly not when on the radio show.
Ironically, and Steven knows this, and I'm doing a podcast with Hatem. I spoke to maybe 10, 15 Muslim people about Trump. To a man, they were much more nuanced in their reaction to Trump's comments about Islam than the average, like, white guy living in his parents' basement, who just, you know, just says Trump's a racist, whatever it is. Most of the Arabs I talked to are like, well, you know, there is a problem. You know, we have it in our country, too. And, you know, but because they have the confidence to be able to say that because they're Muslim, right. So no one can accuse them of anything.
Right, right.
They can take a breath and say, well, there is actually a problem. Go ahead.
I would say using the actual N-word on stage, for a white comic to do so... is a bad idea.
No, I don't think you should use it on stage, but I think you can quote somebody directly. You want to say last things.
Yeah,
you
mentioned that you've spoken to, like, you know, folks from the Muslim community, and their response to Trump has been very measured. What did you think of Faraz's quotes from the Rolling Stone piece?
What was his quote? I don't remember.
Well, he just kind of said that. I mean, I remember the last one. He said he, you know, could just kind of sit there and say Trump's going to ruin comedy, or we're going to take this opportunity to wake people up. And he said, too, that there was a Trump supporter that had yelled out at him immigration was outside waiting for him.
Homeland Security.
Homeland Security, yeah.
Right, sorry.
Yeah. Homeland Security was waiting for him.
How many times how many people have made the hack joke about the Homeland Security is here to deport the Mexicans in the kitchen? I mean, we heard this joke for 20 years. It's nothing new. I don't know. I don't want to be any more disrespectful than Dan already thinks I have been to you in your article.
Not disrespectful. But the poor
I just think
guy
the whole thing is a red herring.
The poor guy, he comes in here. He probably thought, if I had to guess, he thought, ooh, they loved that article, boy. And he's all excited. They called me in, and it's going to be nothing but praise. And, you know.
They should have known better than that.
And it didn't quite turn out that way.
Well, Jim strongly agreed with your article, and that's why I'm just one opinion. Opinions are like,
yes, they are. They certainly
why
are.
Why do you when always look at me?
Because Dan's been criticizing me for making the anus jokes. All right, ladies and gentlemen, we have to end. Mike, thank you very much for coming.
Thank you. This was great.
Facing the Music, Dan Natterman. You have a Twitter or whatever it is?
Yeah, it's Michael R. Stahl, STAHL is my last name.
Good night, everybody. Thank you.